pipe down. Paul Martin's an alcoholic. And I have not taken a drink as a result of a God that will never forgive me, sponsorship that should not be trusted, and a program of action that will never work since May 5th of 2001. Very distracting. I want to thank Matt for asking me to speak. It is always an honor and a privilege to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous, or anywhere really at all. There's a long time people were asking me to stop doing that. So, although really my head tells me about damn time. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be a part of this group. You guys rock. I've never been anywhere where there was more enthusiasm for what the hell is wrong with me than here. I'm not going to go into a long, long drunkologue about where I was, what I did, but to qualify myself, I love getting loaded. And you know what? AA has no opinion on outside issues, hence AA may not never be drawn into public controversy, but I love smoking pot, too. My idea of a good time is dropping three hits of acid and trying to figure out a Rubik's Cube and a strobe light. get it on. Problem is that both of those things tend to cause problems. I mean, the first time, when I started getting loaded, I was just all pothead. I was not going to be a drunk like my mom because my mom's an alcoholic and I had a very low opinion of her at the time. So I was just not going to drink. I was going to, you know, smoke pot because you can quit that. It's not physically addictive and I'll be just fine. I just, you know, just be cool and hang with the cool guys. And it wasn't too long after that I was running the streets of Spokane. I was dealing drugs on the street. I was drinking. I was dealing acid. I was doing everything you do to stay alive and loaded on the streets. A series of events occurred. I left state with a number of people hot on my trail, many of them not very pleased with me, and went out to Wisconsin to get a new start. You know, and everywhere I went, I got thrown out of every place I was. I went to Wisconsin. I got tossed out of my mom's house. I had to leave my grandma's house. I was staying with friends here and there. They all asked me to leave. I wound up going to a I was at one point in a mission in Madison, Wisconsin, and after 2 months of me not getting a job or doing anything to improve myself, they asked me to leave. I don't know how many people have been thrown out of a mission, but that's really rough on your self-esteem. So, you know, honestly, the first time I drank, I never was going to be an alcoholic. The first time I drank, I was on the run from a boys' ranch. Me and Mike had not eaten or, you know, had any kind of meal or a decent place to sleep in like 2 days. We weren't going to go back to Morningstar Boys Ranch, and we hooked up with a couple of guys driving around Spokane in a car, and or there was at least one guy, and there was like three girls, and then I was kind of the odd man out. But we went over to this one guy's house, broke into the basement, and he stole a big gallon of vodka from his parents' house down in the basement somewhere. I don't know, it was a gallon jug or something, and went over to the basement of somebody else's house, and we were going to have a party, and they handed me this big old Slurpee cup, one of them 32-ounce jobs, and they're like, you want to make your own drink or you want us to mix one for you? I don't want to look stupid, so I'm thinking, I'll mix my own. And they handed me the jug, and I filled that thing almost all the way up with vodka. And they're going, do you want a little bit of orange juice with that? I'm like, why? They're like, well, for flavor or something. So I splashed a little bit in there, mixed it around, and took a sip. Couldn't breathe, and I thought, well, I did what children do. I plugged my nose and just hammered that thing down. Sat there trying to breathe for a minute. I got vapors coming out of my eyes. I'm just like, oh. You know, that's I never drank like that before at all. And everybody's going, dude, you're cool, man. You really know how to drink. Do you want another one? And I don't think I had an alcoholic moment there. I think I had a stupid moment there. I'm like, yeah. So I made myself another one, hammered that down. In 15 minutes, I think I downed about a fifth of a gallon of vodka on an empty stomach. I'd been on the run. My system was already on crash and burn. I have brief recollections of periods of time through that night, vomiting yellow, vomiting clear, vomiting nothing, vomiting some black stuff they told me later was blood. I recall later on in the night, I was laying on the floor of this basement because it was nice and cool and thinking, God, I don't want to have to crawl into the bathroom again. Jesus. And I look over and I see this. It was a grill, like a sewer grill, laying right on the floor in the middle of this basement. I thought, oh, perfect. And I just kind of crawled over that and lay next to it and puked in that all night long. I woke up in the morning and it was actually the grill from an outdoor cooker laying on the concrete floor. And I had this stream of vomit all the way down the side. Oh, man. So I swear I was never, ever going to drink again. Alcohol is crap. I mean, this is terrible. Why am I doing this? You know, I'm never going to do this again. And guess who's speaking at an AA meeting tonight? That really, you know, that was a bad beginning for me. And most people would never, ever do that again. But what happened is I got to stay loaded. I can't deal with life. I've come to find out that what I have is I don't have an alcohol problem. I have a sobriety problem. I mean, I can drink pretty good. I can do a lot of other stuff pretty good, too. I can handle the heat. But what happens is when I get sober, I discover that I cannot deal with life on life's terms. I cannot deal with you people. I cannot look you in the eye. I have no self-confidence. I have no tools for living. I have no way to get through the day dealing with my job and the pressure and the stress and the kids and the wife and those retards in traffic. You know, nothing is – I can't deal with it, you know. To this day, my sponsor still thinks I should avoid things like firearms, stun guns, and dynamite. I get a little edgy. So a lot of running. Make a long story short, I wound up in North Dakota running with a carnival. Shortly after that, I wound up married. You want me to connect the dots on that? We'll do that when I have more time. Got married, had kids, started getting loaded again. You know, I'd quit for a little while and then discovered that, you know, a relative of hers was a stoner and that I could buy booze once I turned 21. It was a lot easier to get. And, you know, so I was drinking. I was getting loaded. And I wasn't going to do any of them powders. You know, if I was doing powders, I had a problem. Never mind I'm dealing drugs out of the closet in my house with a wife and kids and a decent job. If I'm doing powders, I got a problem. So I wouldn't do any of that. You know, you got to have boundaries. So eventually I wound up getting popped. I mean, people tend to notice when you're running around drugs, you know, doing illegal stuff. And what happened for me is I got arrested. They only caught me with a little bit, but it scared me enough knowing that what I had at home was a considerably larger amount than what they caught me with. I got rid of that, and I just backed out of that scene. Given a good enough reason, I quit doing that. Given a good enough reason, I quit smoking pot. A little bit here and there. But what I did is I turned to the solution to all my problems, Mickey's Fine Malt Liquor Brew, you know. And I had a 40 of Mickey's every day. And after a while, I started thinking, well, I could handle two of those, and I'd have two 40s of Mickey's Fine Malt Liquor Brew. And then it'd be an exceptionally good day or an exceptionally bad day. I'd get one of them little bottles of, you know, Jose Cuervo, who is my very best friend. Pretty soon, you get the bigger bottle, and then I start doing the math and thinking how much money I could save. And I got a case of beer in the fridge, and I got a big old half gallon or a fifth of Jose, depending on what I can afford, in the freezer every 2 days pretty soon. I was doing that every 2 days. And what I did is I stayed loaded on almost a daily basis for a very long time. I didn't drink at work. Well, except for some Saturdays in there I didn't really discuss, but I wound up drinking on a regular basis, and it was a couple of years into that that my wife and I wound up getting a divorce. I discovered some things I won't go into from the podium, but it was enough to where I decided I can't do this anymore, and we wound up getting separated, and we were in the process of a divorce, but we were just separated, and for the first 3 months I was insane. I was drinking more than I normally drank. I was doing things I normally wouldn't do. I was hanging out with people I normally wouldn't hang out with, driving out of town drunk 60 miles, driving back into town drunk 60 miles. One night I woke up doing 70 miles an hour in the ditch on cruise control between the two sides of I-94 because my car had landed from jumping one of the little access roads the cops used to turn around and chase you. I woke up to just boom, and I opened my eyes, and there's grass and water and stuff flying over my hood. It took me about a 16th of a second to realize this is not a dream. Whoa, floor it, peeled out up onto the road, and the first thing I thought was, I wonder if anybody saw that. You know, I'm looking around. Nothing to do with drinking. And really, I looked at the place where I went off the road since then, and if I had done it about a mile or two before that, I would hit the underside of a bridge, and if I had done it a mile or two after that, I would have dropped down between two bridges, you know. If you don't believe that there's something out there looking out for drunks and idiots, there is. I should not be alive, you know. The places I've been, the things I've done, the people I've done, the places I've been, there is no reason a guy like me should be alive, you know. And I once heard a speaker say that, you know, all my life I'd said, why me, why me, why me? You know, I always felt like the estranged one. I always felt like the different one. I always felt like everybody was picking on me. Everybody's out to get me. Anybody feel like anybody was out to get them? I know that. You know, I always felt that way. And what this speaker said is the last time I said that is about a couple of minutes ago before I got up here to speak. Why me? Why do I get to be sober? Why do I get to be the one that gets to be here and be a part of this? Why do I get to be the one that gets another chance at life? You know, guys like me don't live through this. And to the best of my understanding, the answer is that my work is not done. And your guys' work is not done. There's a reason we're here. You know, people like us don't get to live. So I came wandering into Alcoholics Anonymous entirely by accident. May 4th of 2012, accident, we call that God's way of staying anonymous. But what happened for me is the night before, this girl I had met, her, everybody's got a her or him, depending on, you know, whatever, she and I had gotten into a fight. Some stuff had come up, and I had flipped out. And I don't know about you, but I tend to drink and overreact. I wound up flipping out. I roughed up her. I roughed up my house. I broke some stuff. I wound up taking this really nice crystal chessboard of mine and beating it senseless with a hammer to prove to her how much pain I was in. And made my point. She left. And in the process, I had cut my finger open on a piece of this crystal chessboard had cut me, and I didn't remember this until I was 2 years sober. But I had wandered around the house and I'd bled on the carpet and a few other things, and you know, she had said something about before she left, and I wrapped it up. And I was looking around, I see bloodstains on, you know. And I wound up calling my mom that night and talking to her an extended period of time. My mom is sober, by the way, and she's been sober for quite some time. I think it was about 14, 15 years now. And I had called her up because I know I'm a drunk. And I've become the person that I swore I would never be. I've roughed up a woman. I cannot stop drinking. You know, my life is completely falling apart, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know where to go, and there's no solution to a problem of my type, you know. And the reason I found out, I thought later, I figured it out, that the excuse that I had given myself to call my mom at that late hour of a night was that she had used to work in a dry cleaner. She knew about cleaning stuff, and I called my mom to ask her how to get the bloodstains out of the carpet, you know. I remember that. I was like 2 years sober, and that just fired finally in my head, and I started crying, thinking, Jesus, you know. I mean, where's a guy at when that's where you are, you know? The book talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. It talks about that point where you get the jumping off point, where you can't imagine life with alcohol or without it. You know, it's the end. I can't drink. I can't not drink. I can't live. I can't die. What do I do? Where do I go? There is no solution to a problem of my type, you know? And what happened is the next day she came home and she told me all these things that I needed to change. I knew dang well it was her fault, and but I politely and I think very generously told her, okay, sure, we'll try and do this and this and this. And she said, by the way, I'm going to a dance tonight with another guy. It's an AA dance. You can go if you want to. And I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, AA and a dance? And I don't dance. I don't, you know. It's not a matter if I can't dance. It's a matter if I won't, because if I get up there, I'm going to look like an idiot, and you're going to see that I feel like an idiot. You're going to open me up, expose me to everyone. Everyone's going to turn, laugh, and point. The earth is going to swallow up and eat me, you know. That's how I get. I get a little nervous. I don't want to go to a stupid dance. I don't want to deal with these AA Nazis, you know. I know that, Jesus, I've seen some AA before. So, you know, the AA I saw was just a bunch of old men sitting around, chain-smoking cigarettes, sucking down coffee, holding hands, chanting their little prayers. You know, that's not going to help a problem like me. I need serious help, you know, probably psychiatric help maybe for life. Very strong regiment of a whole lot of stuff. And I came wandering into Alcoholics Anonymous expecting nothing. And it wasn't a dance, it was a bloody roundup. There's 300 of you yo-yos running around in suits and ties and dresses, and everybody's all happy and smiling. And, you know, first thing, as it happens a lot, the first thing to happen is this joker comes dancing across the room with his hand out. Hi, I'm Kane. Is this your first meeting? Oh, geez, look at this, you know. Here we go. And I didn't want him to think I was here for the meeting or nothing. I'm just here to, you know, I'm with her, and I just don't, you know, I just want to straighten things. So I just said, yeah. And he said, great, let me find you a seat. He took me over to this guy, Jeff, and he says, Jeff, this is Paul. It's his first meeting. Can he sit by you? And Jeff says, no, I'm doing a sobriety countdown. Why don't you have him sit way up there? You know, I didn't know it was a setup, but I'm sitting in the third row now, and I'm surrounded by people on both sides like they're not going to let me out. And I'm thinking, geez, I was drinking this morning. You know, I had like 3-4 beers that morning. And this guy, Jeff, gets up to the podium, and everybody said this hello. Hi, Jeff. And I'm thinking, what the hell was that, you know? Whoa. He says, you know, he says he's going to do this sobriety countdown. He's going to start at, I believe it was 30 years. And whoever has 30 years, stand up, and then he's going to count down. And whoever has the least amount of sobriety in the room gets a free copy of the big book. I'm thinking, ah, oh, shit. Great, you know. I know that he knows I'm new. This Kane guy knows I'm new. She's sitting next to me. She knows. The Keith guy in the back of the room, he knows. I'm doomed, you know. And I'm waiting for him to expose me, because they're going to stand out and they're going to say, this guy was still drinking today. Get him out of here. We want sober people in AA. That's it. I didn't know why we have meetings. I didn't know that the only reason that we have these meetings, Bill says that we still meet frequently so that a newcomer may find the message they seek. Why we meet is so someone else gets to stay sober, not so I do. It's so someone else gets a chance to hear it, to get it, to understand that they're not alone in this world, you know. And I came in that room and they counted down, and he gets down to 7 days, and I'm thinking, oh, Jesus. And I look and he's looking at me. I'm like, oh. 6 days, look around, and I still haven't stood up. And he's looking at me. I'm like, crap. He gets down to 2 days, and I still haven't stood up. And I was waiting for him to say, who has 1 day of sobriety? And I knew I wouldn't be able to stand up, because I don't. And what he said saved my life. He said, is there anyone in the room who's in their first day of sobriety? And I don't know why I stood up, but I did. I stood up, and I was expecting the AA police to chuck me out the door, because we don't want people like you around here. You know, we don't drink around. You have to get out. What happened is 300 people came out of their seats, and they gave me a standing ovation. I turned around. I seen people grinning. I seen a couple people a little shiny in the eye, you know, like they maybe had a tear or something. You guys were glad I was there. And I had been a long time since anybody had been glad I was anywhere. So I went up, got the book, went into a complete state of shock for the next 12 hours. sat down with my book, and this lady got up to share her experience, strength, and hope from the podium. It was a lady named Nancy M. And I had nothing in common with Nancy. I mean, she's female. I'm not. She's older than me, lives in another part of town, different story, different life, different everything. And she stood up there, and she told me about the secret fears I have. She told me about the secret anxiety that I have everywhere I go. The bigger the crowd, the more alone I feel. You know, she told me all of these things I had going on in me. She talked about the way I was hiding my drinking, you know. Not word for word my story. But the thing she said reminded me that I would lock myself in the bathroom with a couple of drinks, and I'd be smoking cigarettes and drinking and smoking and drinking and just trying to make the room smaller so I could just disappear, and my kids would be banging on the door, hey, Dad, and I'd say, just a minute, I'm smoking. I remember putting coffee in a coffee mug, drinking it, and putting beer in the coffee mug and telling my kids I'm just drinking coffee, you know. Little stuff like that, but when I look back on it, I've been lying and cheating and stealing and doing all kinds of stuff for a long, long time. And you guys knew what was going on. You guys knew how I felt. You guys knew what it was like to drink the way I drink, feel the way I feel, think the way I think. You knew what was going on in here, and you guys were sober, and you seemed to be doing fairly well. You seemed to have this light on in your eyes that I had not had in a long, long time. I've been walking around with tombstones in my eyes for years, and you guys seemed to have a solution. I knew it wasn't going to work, but I thought, screw it. I've tried everything else. What's the point, you know? I'd already checked myself into the nut ward, planning on going in there in like 3 days, and because I was going off the deep end. There's no way I'm going to make it. And that night, after the talk, I went up to talk to this guy, Kane, and I'm like, yeah, you know, it's so high. And he's like, hey, what do you think of that? And he's just grinning. And I said, well, I think it's pretty cool. You know, it sounds cool. I think I'm going to give this a try. And he says, cool. And I'm like, but what's this deal with a sponsor? Between the meeting and him, I'd had like 38 people come up to me. Hey, how you doing? You got a sponsor? Hey, how you doing? You need a sponsor? Hey, how you doing? Get off of me, you know. And I finally, you know, I said, I don't know what to do, though. I said, you know, what's the sponsor deal? What do I do? How do I get a sponsor? Who's a sponsor? Who's from town? I don't know. This is, you know, it's a bunch of out-of-town people. And he says, oh, I'll be your sponsor. I'm like, oh, crap, not like that, you know. Fine. You know, I said, what do I do? And he said, well, here's three things. He says, make it to at least 3 meetings a week. Make my home group your home group. Fine, I can do that. I can always back out if I have to. What else? And he says, we meet once a week and we go through the book and I show you how to work the steps. Okay. And I was waiting for the hat to drop on the third one because he was going to say, you can't drink if you're in AA. But what he said once again saved my life. He said, call me before you drink. Well, I can do that. And I will be calling you a lot because I drink a lot, man. And I called him on a nearly daily basis for my first year, month, and 11 days of sobriety. There was a few times in there I didn't call him when I was doing things I did not want to talk to him about. He took me through the steps. He taught me about alcoholism. He showed me that, you know, for me, there's two very deciding factors for me. You know, I mean, we talk about drugs. You know, how many people are potheads? Yeah, there's a few out there. How many people have realized too late you took too much acid? That is a couple. How many people in here thought, I need to quit drinking and found that you can't quit drinking? Ah. See, that's what I get here. I get identification. You guys know what it's like to be me. Some of you know the other parts. But everybody here that is alcoholic knows what it's like to not be able to quit drinking. You know, for me, that's the important part. He taught me that, and I knew this long ago, I just never found the words for it. He taught me that when I take a drink, I can't seem to stop drinking. When I take a drink, I get thirsty. I take another drink, I get a little more thirsty. I take another drink, I get a little bit more thirsty. I have never thought to myself, I like the taste of bottled water. I have never sat down and drank a whole case of bottled water and a 2 liter of bottled water in a night. You know, I've told myself I like the taste of beer, but I tell you what, I like the effect produced by alcohol. I like what it does for me. It gets me out of me enough to be okay in the world and comfortable. And once I start drinking, I don't seem to be able to stop. I don't know how many times I've thought to myself, I'm going to have a couple of drinks. I've never, ever told myself, I'm going to drink a half a case of beer, half of the Cuervos in 3 hours and throw up clam chowder through my nose. Not in the play. That happened a lot, man. Wasn't eating a lot of solid food. So, you know, I came to believe little by little that you guys might have a solution to a problem of my type because you were describing what it was I did, and you guys were doing things that seemed to work, you know. I didn't think it was going to work for me, but I had to believe that it worked for you. And really, that very first night, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of something bigger than me, which at the time was AA and Kane, you know. And since then, what my sponsor has done, what his job has been, whichever sponsor I've had, was to get me closer to a God of my understanding. You know, my sponsor is not the one who restores me to sanity. No human power can restore me to sanity. But my sponsor, little by little, gets me closer to a God of my understanding so that I can be restored to sanity. I sat down and I did that inventory, and I wrote down things that I was never going to tell anybody. For a while, there was about 8, 10 of those I was not going to put down on paper. No way in hell. And I'm sitting there debating this one day with myself. I can't put this down. I can't put this down. And it was like this voice popped in my head and said, what do you think you've been running from, Paul? Oh, crap. Write it down. I wrote it down in Elven because I'd been studying Tolkien's handwriting. And I didn't want anybody to discover these things. So I had to memorize how to read it to do my fifth step. And I did my fifth step. And he looked over and saw that. And what the hell is that? Well, it's Elven. Keep driving. He told me one day, you will sponsor people just like you, Paul. And I have. The step I hung on was step six. I know everybody's got a step somewhere where they hung on. They say step six is the one that separates men from the boys or the women for the girls or whatever you want to call it. But for me, that was where I hung. You know, I went through and I did all these. I looked at all this stuff and realized everything that was wrong. And it was all Paul's a problem. I am the one common denominator in every single thing that in my life sucks. Paul is always involved, you know. So are you willing to let go of that stuff? Are you willing to have God remove these? Nope. There's a couple of those I was having a really good time with. Remember those times I wasn't calling my sponsor? Yeah. I was a year sober, actually, and my sponsor introduced me for my 1 year, and he said that he could count the number of suggestions that I did not take on one hand. And that would be Amanda, Heather, Bobby Joe, Renee. These are things that, you know, your first year of sobriety can be real difficult. You do what you want. Really, it's none of my business. I don't give a happy hoot one direction or the other. But I guarantee that in my experience, I screwed everything up, damn near killed myself about four times over stuff like that. So anyway, step six, I finally did that thing one time too many, and I realized that I was sick and tired of who I was. I reached that point of, once again, can't live with it, can't live without it, can't keep going this way. What do I do? Have you had enough? Are you sick and tired of living this way, Paul? Yeah. So I wound up, I called him up, I said, what do I do? He said, go to such and such page, read these two paragraphs. So I did, and I went in there and I read six and I read seven and I did the little prayer in seven and I said, what do I do now? He said, remember that fourth step? Yeah. I said, that's your eighth step. Let's go get ready, start making amends. Oh, Jesus. I know a lot of these people and a lot of them are still not happy with me. You know, I work with some of these people and I wound up, I was making amends. I'm making amends to people at work, taking them aside, telling them, you know what, I don't know about you guys, but I love to talk smack about people. You know, 12 and 12 calls that character assassination, a polite form of murder. I love talking about people behind their back. And I do it in a way that I'm just trying to help you understand why this person is different over here, you know, because they've got this and this and this and this and this, you know. And what I do is I try and get everybody on my side. I want you on my side, you know. And I've done that in Alcoholics Anonymous a great number of times. I've had to make amends to a lot of people, you know. Oddly enough, just in coincidence, you know, I've had, I think, three people make amends to me since I've been here. And I talked to my sponsor about that, and he said, well, Paul, that's because you're sicker than most, and you have to make a lot more amends. It's always my fault, you know. But it's true, you know. I do a lot of stuff, and I have to maintain this thing really a lot. I have to really concentrate on staying in this program, doing these steps. I have to keep coming to this on a regular basis. I work with other alcoholics. I've been working with somebody since I was 4 months sober, you know. That person's still in this room. I've been working with people all along. A number of them are still in this room. I don't sponsor them all still, but for me, I've found, you know, you listen to the history of AA, and they talk about how Bill, when he got sober, went around for like 6 months trying to work with other alcoholics, trying to give this thing away that was given so freely, trying to give someone else the buzz, you know, the good time. This is where it's at. He's trying to give this away. And for like 6 months, people are stealing his silverware and lying to him and getting drunk and it's not working. And he's just putting all this effort in. And it seems like nothing's happening. And my understanding, he went to Lois at about 6 months sober and said, you know what, this is ridiculous. We've had our stuff stolen one more time. You know, I don't know why I'm doing this. It's not working. Not one person has stayed sober. And she said, you did. And to me, that's a really big deal. Not everybody I've worked with has stayed sober, but I have been trying to give back this buzz ever since I got it. I came in here and you guys gave me something that you cannot buy. You cannot pick it up at Walmart. The cops can't give it to you. The police can't give it to you. Your parents can't give it to you. The priest can't give it to you. What you've given me back here is an opportunity to earn this all back. You know, if you want self-respect, you do respectable acts. If you want dignity, you carry yourself with dignity. If you want self-esteem, you do esteemable acts. I mean, there's this long, long list of things. If you want it, you got to go out and get it, you know. I did six and seven, and I was waiting for this to not work, you know. Because six and seven, there's nothing in between seven and eight where this God comes thundering out of the heavens with his flaming chariot and lightning bolts and thunder and wipes away all my character defects, and I'm wonderful, you know. I was waiting for that. It'd be nice, and I knew it wasn't going to happen, and it didn't. So I thought, well, it didn't work, you know. What I've been given is this. I've been given back a choice. I did not have a choice before. I've been given back a choice whether I drink or not. If I take a drink today, I will drink more. You know, guaranteed. I have a physical allergy to alcohol, and when I drink, I get thirsty. I have a mental obsession that tells me that somehow, some way, this time I can have a drink and get away with it. And every time I fall into that, I take a drink, I get thirsty, I wind up drunk, and I find that I don't want to quit anymore. My head changes itself. What you guys have given me is you've given me AA. AA has given me a God. My God has given me a choice. Today I have a choice whether I'm going to drink or not. That mental obsession has been relieved just enough to where I do not have this overpowering need, undeniable power that says, you will take a drink sooner or later, Paul. I've been given back a choice today whether I take a drink or not. And I've been given back a choice on all the defects of character that I have. I have a choice today whether I'm going to talk smack about you behind your back. I have a choice today whether I'm going to steal that or not. I have a choice today whether I'm going to lie on my time card. I have a choice today whether I'm going to steal things from work. I have a choice today whether I'm going to talk smack about Calvin behind his back, which I really get a kick out of. He's just a bigger target. I have a choice on all of these things, you know. And I have a choice whether I really want to make amends about this crap, too. You know, but that, you know, from that very night, I had Kane T and Marcus M came home with me and helped me dump out my booze. And from that following morning on, I have not had to take a drink. I have not had to, I'm not even going to go into it. I have not had to do a lot of stuff. I've been given back a little piece of my, just a little piece of my sanity, you know. And I haven't been given back the life that I had. I've been given something much better, you know. You buy a new house and you have to go in, or you buy an old house and you got a used house, you have to go in there and rip out everything and replace it with new stuff. You know, I think Bob D. said something about that in a talk I heard once. And it's true. Everything of value in my life that I thought was of value has been replaced with something much better today. The life I have today just blows me away. I still cannot believe that some dope fiend alcoholic street kid carny loser is in the kind of job that I'm in, with the kind of woman that I'm with, in the kind of home group that I'm with, wearing a bloody suit, for Christ's sakes. I don't do suits. I'm leather and jeans, baby. 2 foot of hair, get it on, you know. What I am doing here still blows me away. I don't know. But evidently there's a power out there greater than me that still has some kind of a use for me, because I should be dead. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and all of you guys, I would have missed it all. Thank you for my life.